Now, from the left coast to the D.C. Beltway, covering the topics you love to hate and hate to miss, it's the Silk or Joe Show.
The Silk or Joe Show, co-host Joe with y'all today, trying to clear off a tab or two here that I've got called up. But anyway, the Silk or Joe Show comes to you courtesy of the Main Street Radio Network. So, I want to thank them for allowing this program to continue. Go to mainstreetradionetwork.com. This show has been with them the entirety of its existence. This show, which started back in the way off, far off time of November 2013. Does anyone even remember where they were when this show came out first? It was under a different name then. I didn't start hosting until about 5.5 years ago. But anyway, Silk or Joe Show can be found at mainstreetradionetwork.com. And you'll find out more information about the show there, find podcasts for the show there, find an app for Android users so you can get us listening to us on our phone, if you're an Android user. MainStreetRadioNetwork.com. And you can also find the Al Nathan Show there, which I host several times a week. And that also has AlNathan.com as its website, where you can find out more about the late Al Nathan, his articles, op-eds, columns, articulating his version of centrism. Anyway, we are on social media, Facebook at Main Street Radio Network, X at Main Street Radio, and why not, X at Al and Nathan for those of you who wish to see whether or not I'm hosting the Al and Nathan Show that day, although it's probably going to be on those other outlets anyway, whether or not I'm hosting, so it's a little redundant, but whatever. We also want to thank the Salem Radio Network for distributing this show, whether it's you listening to it on CRN Talk or wherever else that it's being aired, or you're listening to it on the little streaming on our website or the app. SalemRadioNetwork.com is covering Salem Radio. I don't think that's their website. The Salem Radio Network is covering it. I'm not actually sure what their website is. I've never been there. Anyway. Speaking of this show, we do have topics to get into, don't we? We have stuff to discuss, and this is absolutely disgusting. Sorry, the imagery on my laptop right now. I've got this article from Gateway Pundit called up, talking about this woman who's been here since 1989. She can't speak English, but she held some press conference with leftist leaders demanding amnesty. She's at that ICE detention facility in Delaney Hall, New Jersey. Like, she's not in there, but she's outside of it. And she's saying that in Spanish there needs to be a pathway to citizenship for people like her, but she's not assimilated. And the disgusting part comes not just because of her entitlement, but also for the combination of names and images here. Her name is Margarita, and for some reason this ad shows tomatoes sitting on a foot. And margaritas are known for their tomato-centric nature. So yeah, that's a little bit icky. But so is this woman who has been in this country for 37 years, seems to have refused to even bother learning the language. We must adapt to her. We must cater to her. And that's the leftist mentality on any kind of immigration. We must adapt to them, not the other way around. America and white people in general have no culture whatsoever. The only people who have any cultures at all, let alone cultures worth preserving, are people from other countries who contribute nothing to us. In fact, who contribute division and balkanization to us. And that's and the leftists, they feel that they can unite all of them with one common enemy, the white person. That's why they go out and say these things. It's all a little bit of a power play on their part. I mean, gee whiz, look at the Democrat leadership for what that had been for years when they started agitating this soup of anti-Americanism. They, white people leading the party, Joe Biden, Nancy Pelosi, Chuck Schumer, Hillary Clinton, holy cow. And then you have Barack Obama as the token minority at the top. Eventually, he made all these inroads, though, and now we get the Democrat socialists that largely came in courtesy of Obama's machinations, I would say. This seems more like an Obama thing than a Hillary Clinton thing. After all, Hillary Clinton's the one who only allowed socialists in the token sense when she was campaigning in 2016 with Bernie Sanders as the nominal opponent, but of course they rigged the elections to stop him. Speaking of rigged elections, of course I gotta talk about those, because after all, the first time I hosted the show was right after the 2020 election, so that kind of led to a bit of a discussion my first time out about phony and rigged and faked elections and stolen elections. Well, Democrats did that in Wisconsin to steal the primary. They had this candidate, Francesca Hong. She was a radical leftist, hated America, hated Thanksgiving, hated white people, literally everything I just said. And she has an opponent who probably has similar views, just is more quiet about them and more electable. But this Francesca Hong person, though, and she was also has the disadvantage of actually having been determined mentally ill at some point. I believe it was bipolar disorder that she had. So you actually could point at her and call her crazy, though that would be slightly offensive to the crazy community out there. But anyway, so she's out there campaigning real hard to be a socialist leader, and she's got all these anti-American 9/11 lovers out there who are saying that she's going to be the candidate, she's great. And then we get into election night and we're seeing that she's got this advantage. Oh, she is only like 1,000 votes behind the establishment leader. All the polls say she's going to win. And then what happens? We get these mystery ballot dumps. And then her lead dissolves. The establishment candidate wins. Wow! Incredible that the establishment candidate managed to pull through with the absentee ballots, but there's a slight issue with those. Number one, apparently this from Milwaukee itself, the capital of Wisconsin. No, wait, is Madison or Milwaukee the capital of Wisconsin? Crap. Silly me and my failing geography. My mom took me to task on that the other day, but Madison is the capital of Wisconsin, right? So, but the power base of Francesca Hong is Madison, the capital of Wisconsin. The power base of this of her opponent was Milwaukee, and we saw that the Milwaukee votes were being counted after the Madison votes had all come in. Why? Because of an alleged delay due to alleged human error. There were supposed to be like 9 USB drives, I guess, that contained tens of thousands of votes, and 5 of them had no useful information on them when they were delivered to be accounted for elections. So that delay allowed them to see where Francesca Hong's votes were going to be at before the area that the candidate that the party wanted to win could be counted. The area that, well, I phrased that terribly. The area where the candidate the Democrats wanted to win had their power focused, and thus could be, pull a few levers to get the votes that they wanted, so to speak. And furthering this complication is the fact that the candidate the Democrats wanted to win was out of action, was not campaigning at the time where many of these absentee votes would have been cast. That's right, this candidate had pretty much dropped out of the race, just handed it over to Francesca Hong. The only thing that saved this candidate was that the governor of Wisconsin came out and said, I would like this person to win. This establishment candidate, that's my guy. I want them to win. That revitalized the campaign. But many absentee ballots had been cast already. So why is it that these people with their absentee ballots would be voting for someone who at the time was no longer on the ticket? And then you have the irregularity that out of all the USB drives that were needed, many of them had, the majority of them had some kind of flaw. They had the wrong data on them, allegedly. So they had to go back. And sure enough, the moment that they all come in, they start coming out in favor, the votes being counted, come out in favor of the candidate that the party wanted to win. Incredible. But we've seen Democrats pull this kind of crap before, haven't we? Going back to 2016, in the Nevada primary, Bernie Sanders got clobbered, and there were many accusations of voter fraud at the time. Democrats just don't seem capable of playing fair. I mean, if you really want to go back, well, it's not voter fraud, but I was just reading about this morning how back in 2008 in Indiana, Barack Obama supporters forged signatures to get his name onto the primary campaign, or onto the, not the primary campaign, but onto the ballot for the primary elections. So Obama should legally not have been unable to win the Indiana primaries for the Democrats, shouldn't even been on the ballot, but he was, and he won. And in 2012, people got arrested over that, people served jail time over that. So we know this has been documented as having happened, that Democrats are quite willing to initiate certain voter irregularities in their own primaries. And then, you know, this culminates with a clip I was reading about from MS Now. Jen Psaki, former White House communications director or press secretary, one of those two. And she's under the Biden administration. She was also in Obama's White House. But she came out and was talking about how the Democrat Party, they used to just select their candidates. They had no primaries. They used to just select candidates either. And one of the ways she said was by putting their fingers on the scale of the primaries, by dumping all their money and all their focus into one particular candidate and giving the illusion of choice. But now that the Democrats have created such monsters with the far left that it's gotten way out of their control, and we're seeing them getting ripped apart in the primaries unless they step in themselves and actually rig the primary elections, as we're seeing possibly in Wisconsin, at least it sure looks like it. More Silk or Joshua after this break.
More bold flavor is headed to Circle K as the convenience chain expands its partnership with one of America's most recognizable celebrity chefs, Guy Fieri. Circle K and celebrity chef Guy Fieri are expanding their successful partnership, bringing an exclusive lineup of Flavortown-inspired menu items to nearly 450 Circle K locations across Arizona and Nevada this month. The menu features four crave-worthy creations available only at Circle K, including the mac and cheese burger, sweet heat fried chicken and waffle sandwich, chicken royale sandwich with Swiss and jalapeno, and the hearty all-American-inspired breakfast burrito. The expansion builds on last year's successful launch in 10 northern states, giving even more customers a chance to enjoy Guy Fieri's signature bold, off-the-hook flavors for breakfast, lunch, or dinner, all without leaving the convenience store. For the nearest participating Circle K location and the latest deals, visit the Circle K app or website.
This could be another year of extreme weather. Hi, I'm Dr. Jen Quammen, president of the American Veterinary Medical Association. Whether it's severe heat, storms, or forest fire smoke, it's important for pet owners to plan ahead. Here are some extreme weather tips. Check the forecast for severe weather in your area. On hot days, walk your dog early morning or at night and keep the air conditioning on at home with access to plenty of fresh water. Avoid intense outdoor activities when there's extreme heat or poor air quality. Never, ever leave your pet unattended in a car. Temperatures can rise within just a few minutes. Plan ahead with an evacuation plan and pet emergency kit, including several days' food, medicine, first aid kit, and toys. Have your pet's medical records on hand and be sure that they are properly identified and microchipped. Contact your veterinarian if you have questions. There's much more valuable pet information available at avma.org. That's avma.org.
Hey, what's up, everybody? I'm Jason Derulo. I love that music connects to people all over the country. But unfortunately, so does something else. Childhood hunger. 15 million kids struggle with hunger right here in America. And yet, every year, billions of pounds of surplus food in the U.S. go to waste instead of going to the children in need. Feeding America is working to change this. The Feeding America Nationwide Network of Food Banks rescues this surplus of food to help provide meals to families in virtually every community in the United States, including yours. But they just can't do this alone. Join me in the fight against hunger in America. For more information on what you can do to get involved, visit feedingamerica.org. That's feedingamerica.org. Together we can solve hunger. Together, we're Feeding America. A message from Feeding America and the Ad Council.
The mission of Paralyzed Veterans of America is clear. Accessibility. Veterans who have served and sacrificed the best of themselves deserve access to the best our country has to offer. Access to meaningful employment. Access to the veterans' benefits they've earned. Accessible homes and vehicles. And access to every part of their communities. With PVA staff working inside VA hospitals, no other veterans organization has provided more real-time, ongoing support for paralyzed veterans and their families. PVA is proud to serve veterans across all branches, all generations, and all conflicts. Our nation's heroes fought for your independence. Join PVA in fighting for theirs at pva.org.
Welcome back to the Silk Road Joe Show, everybody. Co-host Joe with you all today. Just wondering about these shot gloves that ICE are going to be having. All I can think of is this particular race from an episode of Star Trek The Next Generation, their first season, with these shocking gloves where I guess they disable you or something. I don't know how this is expected to work. Because I've seen videos online of people testing these the little taser devices on themselves, and they really only worked if they made contact in a very specific way. Otherwise, it might be like a light tingle or something. Of course, I've never tried that sort of thing on myself. I did have a taser briefly when I was, I had it for a while, but eventually it broke or something. I don't know. I didn't use it, really. It just kind of sat around. I just had it around because I was too wimpy to get a gun at the time. And I just had this, it's like a flashlight taser combo sitting around. It would make a nice little spark and a really loud noise if you tapped a certain button on it. Eventually, though, it just broke on its own. I don't know how or why I bought it from. I didn't buy it off Amazon or anything. I bought it from a legitimate store, probably overpaid for it. But anyway, so I'm not sure how that works, but I guess we'll see. Speaking of immigration, I did start talking about it in the last segment and then diverted all the way over into the Wisconsin primaries. So Democrats just have this odd idea of what immigration should constitute. And we've seen it play out to hilarious effect, what leftists in general think about mass migration. So let's take a look at Spain, for example. The leftists celebrated over there. They wanted the same open borders that Democrats over here wanted. And for possibly the same reasons, too. Demographic replacement, bringing in a bunch of people to commit welfare fraud with, all sorts of things. Democrats just benefit very much from the illegal aspects of open borders and human trafficking. We saw plenty of human trafficking under the Biden administration. We saw the Biden administration aiding human traffickers, basically, and many Democrats at the state level as well, no doubt, were in on it. We've seen possible evidence of cartels bribing government officials. So why not? Why not just open up the borders, flood the country, everybody that the Democrats care about, and mostly themselves, benefits from it? Not really caring about the migrants, though, who are dying in order to come up here. Even with the borders opened up, as any of you who listened to the show back in December during my trip to Yuma, Arizona, courtesy of Americans for Prosperity, where I'm talking with the folks at the border down there, and they were describing how even under the Biden administration's open borders, you think that that would be humanitarian enough for Democrats. But boy, that led to a lot more death than just having closed borders and a secure border did. So obviously they didn't care about the migration. And you would think that if the borders were open, you wouldn't have to pay cartels to get on up here and get past. But you did, and they did. And many women were raped along the way, but of course Democrats don't really care about that. Look at how they treat the rape gang issue over in England. You might be thinking, well, those are English leftists as opposed to American leftists. Yes, but where exactly are the American leftists calling that out? If it had been a right-wing government in England and it came out that it was a bunch of white people raping 250,000 minorities, well, I say minority in a skewed sense because whites are actually a minority globally, that story would be all over MS Now. That would be over every international headline that we have. And every news outlet covering international affairs would be pointing out, yes, these far-right Englishmen are raping these poor immigrants of color. That's a condemnation of white people. I mean, anytime there's a mass shooting overseas that they can tie to the far right, they'll go right onto it. So, of course, if they could tie a mass rape like that into the far right, they'd go right into it. But they can't. It's Muslims doing it. So they just ignore it. Forget about it. Didn't happen. Don't believe any women when it comes to accusing the wrong skin color. That's the leftist mantra there. And it's like I said, it's just not just want them overseas, it's them here as well. That's how they feel about it. I mean, gee whiz. We've seen interviews before. Just recently, there was an interview with this one leftist chick who was saying how she hoped her rapist was a person of color, and she didn't think that jailing him would do anything. It wouldn't help him. Jailing him would do nothing for him. Therefore, she was against him being imprisoned. Let him run free, rape whoever else he wanted to. Who cares? It's just rape, if it's done by non-white anyway. So that's the kind of suicidal empathy that we see from the left, at least from their activists on the ground, who have just been, I guess, pushed into such a logical corner because, you know, everything they do is such a, has so morally reprehensible that they just have to change what they think about it, what they think actually constitutes a more morally reprehensible act, and what they think consequences should be. Now, I guarantee you, if her rapist was a Republican, this very same Democrat would be wanting him to be locked up, throw away the key, execute him if you could. But nope, it was someone she was told was disadvantaged and oppressed, therefore she has to be kind about it. You can't hold these people to higher standards, you see. You can't hold non-whites to high standards. After all, these are just white standards. The Smithsonian itself said this. It's just science. It's settled science that these races are inferior to whites, therefore we can't hold them to high standards. That is the Democrat Party's thinking. It's been that way for many years now. Gee whiz, we see that, what, in the state of Oregon, I keep bringing this up, their education system there, where because blacks can't read, blacks can't write, blacks can't do math when they graduate school, well, we'll just, you know, strip that requirement for graduating. We'll just hand them the diploma anyway. We'll hand everyone a diploma, because it just wouldn't be fair to the blacks. We can't do anything to actually correct this problem. They're just too stupid. So instead, we're going to make it so that it's not a problem at all. You can graduate no matter how little you know. That's, again, Democrats. Oregon is not ran by Republicans. The Oregon Department of Education is not ran by Republicans, but this is the thought that the Oregon Democrats came up with. And they're not like racist Southern Democrats from the 60s either. Oh no, these are progressives. These are anti-racists. These are the ones that allowed the Black Lives Matter riots to continue in their cities. These are the ones who do nothing about the riots at their ICE facilities. These are the ones who were about ready to start killing people. Well, they were pretty angry when it came out that a non-citizen was killed in front of an ICE facility, only to learn it was another non-citizen who did the killing, and then suddenly that story disappeared real quick. You know, that's how progressive these folks are. So they're not going to be the ones to be racist just for the sake of being racist. Oh no, they're not the ones who, they're going to couch it in progressive language, progressive anti-racist language, and they genuinely believe this. They think it's altruistic to be racist. But that's kind of what we heard 100 years ago, isn't it, with the Democrat Party? That racism is equivalent to altruism, that we just want to create a fair space for these folks to compete. That's why they need separate spaces. It's the same thinking. It's just repackaged with this little extra line about how it's the fault of white, of evil white people that any of this is happening. That's it. That's the only difference. And I've said that many times before on the show, but that governs their philosophy on immigration. We need to just invite the entire world into the United States and hook them up on welfare. And boy, isn't that very profitable when we do that for Democrats, isn't it? And speaking of the Pacific Northwest, in Seattle, they had this program, or Washington State, they had this program that was spending $20 million to give benefits to migrants. Only 127 or so migrants actually got benefits from this $20 million program. Where'd all the rest of the money go? Whose pocket is that going into? Because we see that with everything that the left does. I mean, look at the homeless crisis. Seattle, again, $100,000 spent per homeless person. They're still on the street. They're still drug addicted. That money ain't going to them. That's going to someone else's pockets. And thus we get to the nature of why the left wants all these migrants and is willing to forgive their crimes. Because it's just that much more profitable to do so. Not to mention how it benefits them electorally. More on Silk or Joe Show after this break.
If you're one of the millions of Americans traveling with pets, it's a great idea to plan ahead. Hi, I'm Dr. Michael Bailey, past president of the American Veterinary Medical Association. Before you take off on vacation, think about a visit to your veterinarian to make sure your pet is current on all vaccinations and medications. Here are some tips for smoother travel. Pack all your pet's needs, including extra water, medication, pet carrier, toys, and first aid kit. On-road trips, offer your pet water, exercise, and bathroom breaks, and never, ever leave your pet alone in a parked car. In dog-friendly hotels, be considerate of other guests. Keep your dog on a leash. If flying with your pet, contact your airline about their pet travel policies before you arrive at the airport. Check with your veterinarian, make sure your pet is fit for travel, and think about boarding if there's a chance they might not be comfortable. There's more valuable pet information at avma.org.
This report is sponsored by IBM. A new study from the IBM Institute for Business Value reveals a growing disconnect between executive perceptions of AI progress and employee experience. Executives report AI-driven role change at twice the rate employees experience it. 81% say AI skills are rewarded, yet 43% of employees lack employer AI training, and 50% say AI obscures contributions. Aparna Nair, IBM's Chief Talent, Leadership, and Culture Officer.
The organizations that will lead in this era won't just be the ones with the best AI. They'll be the ones that invest equally in their workforce, making it clear when to trust or challenge the system, strengthening how managers coach decisions, and rewarding employees for using AI responsibly, not just using it quickly.
The study finds that organizations most likely to stand out, redesign workflows, enable managers to coach effectively, clarify decision-making, and align incentives alongside AI adoption. These organizations could see up to 73% higher revenue growth and an 11% operating margin advantage over their peers. To learn more, visit ibm.com/IBV.
Essential tremor and Parkinson's disease are progressive movement disorders that can interfere with daily activities, and symptoms can significantly impact quality of life. To share more, here's movement disorder specialist and behavioral neurologist, Dr. Philip Tipton.
I'm working with Boston Scientific to raise awareness of deep brain stimulation, or DBS, as a treatment option for essential tremor and Parkinson's disease. DBS works by sending mild electrical signals to a targeted portion of the brain through a small implanted device called a stimulator. These signals can help improve movement symptoms associated with Parkinson's disease and essential tremor. Boston Scientific's Versice Genus Deep Brain Stimulation System is an FDA-approved treatment option for Parkinson's disease and essential tremor. Talk to your doctor about the risks and benefits of deep brain stimulation and if it's the right option for you.
Learn more about Boston Scientific DBS therapy by visiting dbsandme.com. This message is brought to you by Boston Scientific.
Steven.
Who said that?
Me, down here.
What are you, a yellow booger?
I'm a banana slug, Steven.
Well, what are you doing in my room?
I'm your sense of adventure. Don't you remember me? Don't you know that we miss you?
Miss me? Who misses me?
You know, all your friends in the forest. The trees, the pond, that little fort that you made out of branches. We all miss you.
Mom took me to the forest last year.
I'm a slug, Steven. It took me a long time to get here.
Oh, I guess that makes sense.
This forest is not that far away. Have an adventure today. I'm sure your mom would take you.
You're right. I should get out. I want to have fun. Play in puddles, catch frogs, and climb trees. Hey, Mom!
Yeah, hon?
Steven! What is that in your hand?
It's my sense of adventure, Mom. It's telling me we need to get out of the house and have some fun in nature today.
Come to the forest where the more adventurous you lives. Check out discovertheforest.org for cool places nearby. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
No word in the English language is less convincing than probably.
Are you sure we should get matching tattoos on our first date?
Sure. We'll probably stay together.
Probably?
It's been 23 minutes since I ate. I can probably swim.
You should wait 30 minutes.
Okay, now tell me what to do. Cannonball! Cramp! Oh, I have a cramp.
I can probably hit the green from here.
Probably.
Can I get a mulligan?
Ready to go?
Hey, are you sure you're okay to drive?
Yeah, I'm pretty sober. Yeah, I'm probably okay.
Probably okay isn't okay, especially when it comes to drinking and driving. If you're drinking, call a cab, a car, or a friend. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to the Silk or Joe Show, everybody. Co-host Joe with you all today. Appreciate you all being here with us. And we do have a bit of an education problem in America, don't we? With 25% of young adults in America perform at the lowest levels of functional literacy, and a lot of people still get high school diplomas despite that. I think only 31%, I'm trying to read this thing here where it came from, I'm not sure, but high school seniors who graduate functionally illiterate, only 31% of 12th graders perform at or above literacy. Yeah, we're having a literacy problem here, which is a civics problem. Probably explains a lot why a lot of people hold the wild views that they do. They can't read, can't do math, but still are just handed off a high school diploma. And there's varying statistics, you know, between 19%, 25%, I guess, of high school graduates can't read. 20% of high school graduates barely literate. Certainly not earning their diplomas. But joining us now to talk about this literacy crisis, and it's not just in high school, of course, it goes right on down the education system. We have new data coming out on middle schools where you have Jay Ford. He is an internationally acclaimed American author whose latest release, Rustling of the Sycamore, should be italicized here in my notes, but that's his fifth book and his first in this young adult genre. He is founder of Lit Nation, leading America's youth back to literature, a new movement dedicated to rebuilding a culture of reading among young Americans. Jay Ford, appreciate you joining us. How are you today?
I'm very good. Thank you. Thank you for having me. Look forward to the discussion.
Yep. Glad to have you. And yeah, I appreciate you joining us for this discussion. I don't appreciate having it, though, because, you know, America, we used to be considered, what, in the 19th century as being a beacon of education. Even the average farmhand would have a high education and be very literate. You know, foreign nationals would come around and marvel at our education system. But then it's now our folks can barely read.
Yeah, we've just continued to lower and lower and lower the standard. The biggest thing I think that is causing a problem is the impact of social media. You know, kids now, you know, 90 to 95% are on social media. They spend hours and hours just scrolling through content. And what parents don't realize is that most of that is driven by these sophisticated algorithms that look for sensationalized content to push to your kids. So you know, if they watch a video of a fight in a parking lot, now they're going to get hundreds of the same type of content because these algorithms are going to push that because it's sensationalized, it gets clicks. And so they're kind of being brainwashed by social media, and that's a big problem that we have that we have to address.
Yeah, because their minds are still developing. So this the effects that social media has been seen to have on it, the effects the algorithms have on it, the dopamine hits, all that sort of thing, it's hitting them at a time when their brain is being is growing. So the brain is being told this is normal, this is how things should be, and effectively it's shutting it off to stronger attention spans, amongst other things that are necessary to ensure literacy.
Absolutely. And this is what parents need to understand. Reading affects the brain differently. Reading is character building. It's problem solving. It's imagination. It takes a little bit of patience to sit down. It calms the mind. You know, this stuff that they're getting on social media is absolutely destroying their mental capability. We can see the impact that it's having on their attention spans. We can see the impact it's having on literacy rates. This is why it's critical that we create balance in the house. So part of our initiative with Lit Nation, it's a three-part initiative. The first part is really looking to the home structure, the parents, the grandparents, the guardians, help create some balance in the house because social media is addictive. It's like a drug. It's like you said, the dopamine hits. The only way that we're going to be able to help these kids get off of that as parents is to take the role of creating some balance. Have them have to put down the device or phone for, you know, a half an hour or whatever you can squeeze out of them and make them pick up a book and start to change some of those bad habits and turn those into good habits. I think it starts in the home.
Yeah, the question becomes, though, how do you get them interested in reading if, you know, they're dealing with effectively addiction? How do you turn them on to reading from that?
Great question. Yeah, that's a great question. So as I mentioned, it's a three-part process. The first is to create the balance to time block so that they are required to, because you don't want it to be a punishment. So it doesn't have to be an or thing. It's not like you can't use your social media. It's an and. You can use social media, but also we want you to spend some time reading. So that's the first step. The second one is a degree of separation, which means that because if you say, okay, you're going to read 30 minutes before you go to bed at night, and they have their phone right beside them, every few seconds it's binging, going off, because they're getting texts, they're getting things posted, and they're never able to really pay attention. So you almost have to create a degree of separation from the device. But to your question, which is really critical, the third piece is giving them good content. And that's why I wrote this series, Rustling Under the Sycamore. It's a fantastic read for young adults. It's got action adventure. It's got problem solving. It's got amazing characters that they're going to love. But the most important thing is it's based. It's parents want their kids reading this type of content. There's no sexually explicit material in it. It's family structure. It's got God and religion. It's got all the things that we look for that we want to influence our kids. But it's also a very exciting action adventure story. And I think if we can get them to pick up books that have content that they enjoy, that's going to encourage them to want to read more.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's interesting, too, that we would see such high illiteracy rates despite, well, first of all, the internet being touted as this great provider. Everyone has access to knowledge. Everyone can look anything up. It's more information than anyone ever has access to. We should be a well-informed public. But second of all, a lot of the time is actually spent reading, whether it's the title of the video or it's the subtitles in the video or it's the comments section. Yet, despite that, the literacy rate is just plummeted anyway, despite a lot of this being reading based.
Well, most of the applications these days, like, you know, if you look at Instagram or you look at TikTok, they're just quick 10-second videos. You know, that and it's just how sensationalized of a content can you push on a kid in 10 seconds that's going to get an emotional response? That's what the algorithms look for. So, you know, they're not really doing a lot of reading anymore. To your point, you know, back when there were you actually read headlines online or something on the internet, it was a little bit different. But now it's really changed, and we can see the impact. You know, it's so frustrating. You've got a major library in every city in the country. We've got more access to books than anywhere in the world, and we've got one of the worst literacy rates. Something doesn't add up.
Mm-hmm. Right. And so hopefully your Rustling of the Sycamore can lead to that. Now, did you just look at the problem with literacy amongst the youth and say, I need to do something about it, and that's what prompted the book? Or was this something you had, an idea you had percolating for a while?
We just moved back from 2 years living in South Korea, and my son's 15 was in school there, and all of his friends were readers. And I've written this is my fifth book, so I've always been an author, and I've done very well with adult series books and self-help books. But when we came back to the U.S. in January, and he reconnected with all his friends his age, none of them are readers, and I was shocked because we had just come from a culture where education is so is so exceptional, and the parents push their kids so hard, and they make them sit down and they read, and we come to a place where the parents just didn't seem engaged or really thinking about or how they solve this problem. So that's why we put this initiative together. That's where the book comes from, because I feel that if the parents do get involved, the parents do time block, the parents do get them looking at books again, and we give them good content, they're going to want to continue to read, and it's going to help create good habits for them.
So a lot of this then does come down to the parents, whether it's not allowing the failing public education system to be the sole proprietor of what their children's future will be, or it's monitoring what their children are doing on the phone and phone use. Parents really need to get involved with the kids. They just can't let everything be on autopilot.
That's the most consistent thing that we've been able to find. Of course, we want good legislation. We want the school systems to clean up. We want the labor, the teachers' labor unions to push this in the schools. But we don't have a lot of control. That you know, there's so much politics. There's so much agenda based in that. The only place where we really have true control is in the household. Because the school systems are very inconsistent. In some places, you've got very good school systems that push education, that push reading, that encourage the kids. Some kids are in private schools where it's more encouraged. Some kids are in urban areas or other areas where there's no emphasis at all on reading. So it's very inconsistent. But the one place that is consistent is what you do in the home. If we can get it right in the house, and then they also get it at the school, then that's a double good. But if they're not getting it at the school and they're getting it in the home, at least they're getting it from somewhere, and it's making a difference in their life.
Yeah, and I suppose part of the issue, too, especially when it comes to social media, as far as getting parents to understand this, is the parents themselves are probably on their phones scrolling around just like they see their kids doing. Yeah. And it's like, well, this isn't harming me. Why would it be harming my kid?
Absolutely. You got to set a good example. I mean, I think that's true of everything as part of being a parent. How do you set the right example in the house? And you're absolutely right. That is also a problem. But, you know, and maybe the parents do need to pick up a book and set a good example. But at least if they have their children do a little time block, 30 minutes or whatever you can squeeze out of them, make them pick up a book. If it's before bed or sometime during the day, and you have this degree of separation from their device so that they can actually pay attention, and you give them good content, we're finding that it does make a difference.
Mm-hmm. Well, Jay Ford, we've got less than a minute left here, so I'm just going to let you tell us where our listeners can find out more about Rustling in the Sycamore and where they can find more about Lit Nation.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's on Amazon, so you can search my name, J-A-Y-F-O-A-R-D, and you'll find the book. And I'd love to hear your feedback. I'd love to hear if your child enjoys it, if it makes a difference in their life or their reading habits. Please let me know. We're looking for really good wins and good stories so that we can show that what we're doing is making a difference.
All right. Well, thank you for being on the show to talk about this. Listeners, go check it out during the break. We're on the other side, though.
What is going on? Okay, we need to get out of here. Now, move.
Stakes are high in the season finale of Patience, the hit British crime series that captivated viewers this summer on PBS. The thrilling season comes to a dramatic close this Sunday night, and all episodes are available on PBS Passport and PBS Masterpiece on Prime Video. Patience follows an autistic criminal records clerk named Patience Evans, who uses her unique analytical skills to solve murder cases. In the season finale, Patience and D.I. Monroe are held hostage by an escaped prisoner seeking justice, and time is running out. Patience joins PBS's extensive catalog of mysteries. From beloved classics to newer hits, there's a mystery around every corner, and mystery loves company. Don't miss the season finale of Patience this Sunday at 8 p.m. 7 Central on PBS. And stream the entire series on PBS Passport and PBS Masterpiece on Prime Video.
When 17-year-old Chris Meyer came home sick, his parents thought he was coming down with the flu. A day later, the high school senior died from meningococcal meningitis. His mother, Leslie, is sharing his story to help avoid similar tragedies.
I never knew there was an infection that could kill a healthy child in less than 24 hours, but meningococcal meningitis can do that. Meningitis spreads through respiratory droplets, so being around other kids, sharing water bottles, and kissing can transmit the disease. I didn't know that a vaccine may have helped to prevent my family's tragedy. In honor of my son Chris, I'm raising awareness about meningococcal vaccination so other families don't go through what we did.
The American Academy of Pediatrics recommends two doses of the MenACWY vaccine, the first at age 11 or 12, and a booster at age 16 when teens are at highest risk for meningococcal disease, which can be unpredictable and potentially devastating. This back-to-school season, discuss the importance of vaccination with your child's healthcare team. This message is sponsored by Sanofi.
My name is Judy Teeter, and I'm the mother of three boys. My youngest, Joe, was a great kid. He loves sports, music, and his youth group. One day, Joe asked me to drive him to an after-school event, which was about a mile from our home. I was driving through a green light when a car in cross traffic ran a red light and drove right into the side of our car, killing Joe. The driver was talking on her phone, so she never even saw the red light. She was so absorbed in her phone call. Before the crash, I didn't realize just talking on a cell phone while driving was so dangerous. Now it's something I think about every day. According to the National Safety Council, about 1 in 4 car crashes involves a cell phone. Hands-free is no safer. When you're behind the wheel, put away your phone. For Joe and for the thousands of needless deaths every year. Remember, there is no safe way to talk on a cell phone while driving. Find out more at nsc.org/callskill.
Take a look under your bed. Find stuff under there? What about jobs? No? Now try your basement. There's a pair of overalls that overall you're not so into anymore. A perfectly good laptop that hasn't sat in your lap in months. And even more stuff, but still no jobs? Well, you really have both. See, stuff is defined as household articles considered as a group. Sometimes this stuff is no longer needed. Wait, no longer needed? That can't be right. Because remember those jobs you were looking for? Those are really needed, and they're the stuff inside your stuff. Even inside that winter coat that moved with you to Phoenix. Our job is to unlock those jobs, and it starts when you donate your stuff to your local Goodwill. Here's how we do it. When you donate to Goodwill, we sell your stuff to provide job training for people right here in your community. So just by teaming up with Goodwill, you help create jobs. And isn't that worth parting with the leftover guitar from your 80s cover band? Goodwill. Donate stuff, create jobs. Find your nearest donation center at goodwill.org. A message from Goodwill and the Ad Council.
I'm Ben Affleck, and I want to thank you for joining me and supporting Paralyzed Veterans of America. Our vets need you.
I'm a quadriplegic. I'm definitely at risk with my diminished lung capacity.
I have MS. I'm in a wheelchair and I can't leave the house because I have a compromised immune system.
I'm very concerned about, would there be a bed for me? Would there be a ventilator for me? Would I be able to survive something?
It's just heavy. You know, it's a heavy moment. This is a war. This really is.
Our veterans fought for us. Let's fight for them.
I am so grateful for the PVA. They're making sure that we have all of the food and supplies that we need right now.
We all gotta help each other right now. We can't get through this by ourselves.
It's with profound gratitude that you're gonna be saving our lives. To find out how you can help, please go to helppva.org. That's helppva.org.
Welcome back to the Soaker Joe Show, everybody. Co-host Joe with you all today. And we are joined now by Katie Asher. She is a researcher and co-author with her severely neurologically injured autistic son, Houston, of the Book of Heaven. Hey, boy, this is going to get me every time, because half the time I will say if someone has a book, I will have it written down as being the book followed by the title. But the book's title is The Book of Heaven, a story of hope for the outcast, the broken, and those who lost faith. Katie Asher, appreciate you joining us. How are you today?
I'm great. Thanks for having me.
Yep, glad to have you. So we have over in Massachusetts this issue with how the governor has just signed a bill allowing abortion up to birth. I thought this stuff was supposed to be safe, legal, and rare. And a majority of Americans polled, regardless of political affiliation, do not favor abortion at this high. Yet we see this gathering of women smiling and patting each other on the back over, effectively, infanticide. I mean, what do you see here?
Well, it's about as evil as it looks. And I saw one person said it looks like a group of witches, that, like, all clapping for evil. And it does. It's literally what it looks like. They are literally celebrating and rejoicing over the right to kill innocent life, and which is wrong at any age, at any stage. It is horrific that they are rejoicing over that.
Mm-hmm. And it certainly belies many excuses that they have over why abortion would be necessary, even in the earlier phases, if effectively the infant is able to survive on their own outside the womb, but you still want to terminate it, and not for any medical reason like the woman can't give birth or without risk to life or anything like that. Rather, it's just, whatever reason pops into your head.
Well, yeah, I also have to understand that there is a financial interest involved. They have just gathered together so much propaganda over so long and basically made women believe that children are a horrible nuisance and you should avoid them at all costs, and that the only thing that matters is yourself. And what they don't understand is that the medical the whole institution has a financial interest in women aborting their babies. I don't know if your audience knows, but they sell baby body parts. There is a whole market for baby body parts. You get huge money for baby body parts.
Yeah,
the more developed they are, the more lucrative these body parts are, as far as pre-products that they get to sell and make more money off of. They are harvesting children for parts. This is evil.
Yeah, there's this ongoing case right now that Planned Parenthood could be on the hook for $2 billion over. It's been going since 2015, where they were caught doing exactly this on hidden camera footage, and the doctor involved was just so flippant about the whole thing, and eventually just false Medicaid claims were filed after these clinics were closed down that were doing these horrific procedures for just pure profit of selling body parts. And now eventually that's ballooned to this $2 billion legal case that's still going on. So maybe there'd be some accountability there, but I don't really see, you know, $2 billion sounds like a drop in the bucket compared to the money that this industry is getting and generating.
That's correct. And whenever I posted about this, and the reality is my daughter was, as a little girl, I mean, she was a young girl, she had her learner's license, and she became pregnant by her boyfriend. And the family of the boyfriend lied to me, stole my daughter out of school, and went and had a late-term abortion performed on my daughter without my knowledge or consent. They broke the laws in Georgia that require parental consent. They did everything illegal. And when I found out and went to try to get it adjudicated, all the attorneys told me there's no cause of action. So we have really huge legal barriers because this is legal. It cannot be legal. We cannot make taking the lives of other people legal ever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we've seen where this will lead because, you know, when abortion was first pitched, safe, legal, and rare, but and then eventually it was, oh, we don't want to do it partial birth or anything like that. I mean, what's next? We're already at abortion up until birth, and there's certain loopholes in California that might allow such that might allow just purely killing the baby right outside the womb too. And Maryland tried to pass such loopholes a few years ago as well. I don't think that got anywhere, but still. That seems to be the next step. And I mean, here in Virginia, a former Democrat governor outright said that's the next step.
The country has got to find its soul again. They have got to come back and figure out that there actually is a right and there is a wrong. And it is not just okay to say so, but it's required for us to say so. And the only response that we should have to an abortion is this is horrible and awful and it should never happen ever. Not let's make it okay. Because once you... It's a slippery slope. As soon as you let it, it's okay for one situation, then it's another situation. And now, of course, they have this whole propaganda calling abortion health care. I was talking to a mom this morning who said that in Massachusetts that there used to be quite a few kids with Down syndrome. And now, and she's seeing the schools, they're none. They're being aborted.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, back in 2017, it was the country of Iceland. The media was celebrating how the rate for Down syndrome had been lowered to almost zero there. Like, Down syndrome has been eliminated in Iceland. And that's because all the babies with Down syndrome had been aborted there. And it was absolutely monstrous thing, but it was being celebrated.
Yeah. Well, this is really what it's back to the premise of the 20s, which was all about, you know, creating a perfect race where everything's perfect and there's no problems. And you just eradicate something that's a problem instead of accepting, you know, a challenge and living with the challenge and making the most of every single human life and letting their life matter and your life matter and you becoming a better person because you met a challenge with love and hope.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, instead, we're seeing this. I mean, you mentioned the financial interests earlier. I mean, there's a lot more, I think, than the medical industry at play here because, of course, you have the politicians campaigning on it. It's big bucks for them. And it keeps somehow it keeps women coming back. I remember back in 2022, Roe v. Wade was pretty much on the ballot because of what the Supreme Court did. And that led to Democrats winning. But then there's also the corporate interest. Women have an abortion, come back to work the next day, be a good corporate drone. So it seems like everybody is really profiting from this. Except the infant.
I agree. It's not in... Motherhood does not make you wealthy. It doesn't. It absolutely costs you money, time, effort, energy, and it is the most worthwhile thing you can ever do with your life is to raise another human being and love them.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Asher, appreciate you being on the talk about this. We have about 20 seconds left. Where can listeners get a copy of your book, The Book of Heaven?
Yes, on Amazon. It's also on Audible, and everyone enjoy it. It's the story of a miracle, which that is what God is in the business of doing.
Mm-hmm. Well, appreciate you being on. Listeners, something for you to check out. Of course, this music means we're done with you all for this hour of the program, and our website is MainStreetRadioNetwork.com. Be seeing you.
The opinions you hear on the Main Street Radio Network are those of the hosts, callers, and guests, and not necessarily those of the station, Main Street Radio Network, its management, or advertisers. The information on the Main Street Radio Network does not constitute a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or securities. Please consult a professional before investing. If you have any questions or comments about Main Street Radio Network, contact us at 703-978-0600 or at our website, MainStreetRadioNetwork.com.